Good morning. Today's Daf and Yevamos Tetzvav. We're on Yud Amud Beis. We're starting towards the top of the Amud, and there's one topic for today. It's a really fundamental topic. It's a really interesting Daf. We're going to be discussing Machlokes Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel, and notably, Beit Shammai obviously disagrees with Beis Hillel numerous times throughout the Gemara. Not so long ago, back in Chagiga, so the Gemara talked about the proliferation of Machlokes. If you recall, remember. So there weren't that many machloksim up until Shammai and Hillel. In fact, Shammai and Hillel themselves had a total of 3 machloksim, and that was it. And then Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, so from that point going forward, there was a proliferation. If I remember correctly, this one I'm pretty confident in. If I remember correctly, so Tosus there in Chagigah quoted a Gemara Yerushalmi. The Gemara Yerushalmi says that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel were not mishamish the Rebbeim sufficiently. Okay, that is a criticism, and I feel really uncomfortable, but the Yerushalmi says it, and so I'm just saying it over. And that is that because they weren't diligent in terms of their studies together with the Rebbeim of Shammai and Hillel, so Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel had a lot of machloksim. And it really put a divide line between two practices of Yiddishkeit. And so what's going to happen now is that there's so much machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, and if you have one group practicing one way and another group practicing another way. And I'm saying it like Rashi, because Rashi says it repeatedly throughout the entire sugya. Rashi is totally invested in this one idea. That is, it's near Kishtei Taurus. It looks like there are two Taurus. So, and obviously there's one Torah, meaning Moshe Rabbeinu was Kibbutz Torah Mitzinai, and it was one Torah, divided into two parts, Torah Shebachlaf, Torah Shebalpeh. But in terms of how to practice it, so there's one practice. So if what now happens is that if you have this kind of split and division amongst the Jewish people, so it's near Kishtei Taros. And it's a violation of Loses Godadu. So what do you do? So what you do is that, and what we have done, is that we have elected to go with the Shita of Beis Hillel over that of Beit Shammai. So why do we go over with the Shita of Beis Hillel over that of Beit Shammai? So that also we touched on yesterday's stuff. Number one, Beis Hillel is the majority. So Acharei Rabim Lahatos. In addition to that, you also had a Baskol. And the Baskol said that we're going to be following like the Shita of Beis Hillel. Okay. All that's well and good. Beit Shammai obviously disagrees on numerous points. In fact, in today's daf, we're going to be covering approximately a dozen points of machloksim. And that's not it. Meaning it's not just limited to a dozen machloksim. But you'll see why we're going to be pointing to approximately a dozen different machloksim today between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And the question becomes the following. And this is going to be the Gemara's question for the entirety of today. So we now, in retrospect, have elected to go with the Shita of Beis Hillel. Okay. But at least during the period of Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel, where Beit Shammai disagreed. So when they disagreed, did that mean that they disagreed in the Beis Medrash? Or did it actually manifest itself in practice? In other words, did Beit Shammai at the time, while they were disagreeing, did they say, we're not only going to disagree with you in the classroom, but even outside as well. But in practice, are we also going to disagree? Now, this is where I mentioned with my chavrusa this morning. This is where I think the Gemara is super. In of itself, the Gemara is already interesting, but the Gemara becomes super interesting because you will see. We're all going to see together this morning a preponderance of evidence that would indicate that, of course, they practiced it. Meaning, any one of the Mishnayos that we're going to be quoting today is going to be sufficient grounds and it seems to be super obvious that, of course, they practiced their positions. It wasn't just a base medrash machlokas. It was a machlokas in terms of how to actually practice it. It's a little bit challenging to understand why the Gemara is so resistant to accept that point. But you'll see there is a tremendous amount of resistance on the Gemara's part to accept the point that they actually put into practice. The evidence is going to be overwhelming. Okay. And the Gemara is still going to just hit the point again and again. Maybe not, maybe not. Maybe they didn't practice it. But as you will see, we're all going to see together. It would suggest that, yes, they did practice it. Right. I think I was thinking that. I think that that's why the Gemara had such resistance to the idea. Gufa, so we're going to pick it up where we left off yesterday when Yud Amud Beis. We're about 10 lines from the top of the Amud. First words in the line is Kala Islay Kamash Malan. Okay, let's also review one other point before we start with the daf today, an important point, which is really the whole reason why we're here, and that's the machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel regarding Tzaras Erva. Okay, so again, let's review. Tzaras Erva from the beginning of the Masechta up until about 2 days ago. So Tzaras Erva, so what did we learn? Tzaras Erva is an Erva. You have the co-wife of an Erva, A man is married to two women. One of them is his, one of them is an erva to his brother, and the other one is just tam, a woman. And then he dies. And now the erva and the tsaras erva is presented to his brother for yibum. So the halacha is, this is shitas beis hillel, which is a halacha, is that not only is the erva going to be pater from yibum, but the tsaras erva also is going to be pater from yibum as well. And when I say pater, it means, it's more than pater, meaning that she's an erva to the yavam. And that means to say that if the yavam does, in fact, do the mitzvah of yibum with her, so he is not doing a mitzvah, but just the opposite. In other words, he is now with an erva. And as a result of that, the children are going to be mamzerim, et cetera, et cetera. That's all shitas beis shammai. And then when we saw the next Mishnah, so what we learned together is that beis shammai disagrees. And beis shammai says that tsaras erva is muteres. Okay, and how does beis shammai know that? That was the Gemara's discussion. It's either a drasha or it's a svara. But okay, that right now, the part that we just have to review and know is that beis shammai says that tsaras erva is not an erva. And that means to say that the yavam can now do the mitzvah of yibum with her. Okay, that's a huge difference of position between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Okay,
and told by that she's
okay. Well, hold on one second. It's a great question. Just wait one second. So now, with that in mind, so the so now, how does this all come out to play in terms of practice? So it's going to be really difficult because now, from the perspective of Beis Hillel, and I know this part's confusing, but just let's all follow. From the perspective of Beis Hillel, so now what is going to be of this woman, from Beis Shammai's practice? So in Beis Shammai's practice, so what just happened now is that a man was with a woman who is an Isser Kares. The children are going to be mamzerim. Okay, you're not allowed to marry a mamzer, and that as Ben pointed out yesterday, right? Not this Ben, the other Ben. As Ben pointed out yesterday, that's generational. That's going to go now for the next generation, the generation that ad infinitum. And so that is, it's more than problematic. That's fundamental. Now let's go the other direction. From Beis Shammai to Beis Hillel. So what now happens? So for Beis Hillel, there's no mitzvah of Yibam. So this woman now is going to marry somebody else. Now, from Beis Shammai's perspective, that's a Yavama Lashuk. Yavama Lashuk is a lav. Okay, it's a lav. So that means to say that if now a man marries her, so he violates a lav, which is not good, but the children are not mamzerim. Okay. So now we're looking at it from each perspective. So from Beis Hillel's perspective, it's catastrophic. From Beis Shammai's perspective, it's not so bad. Okay. Let's go with the Gemara. Gufa. Amar Rebbe Elazar afa pishenechlu Beis Shammai Beis Hillel b'tzaros. So yes, they're debating about tzaros. Modim shein mamzer ela mimishi surei sur erva v'nishkares. They both agree in terms of what produces a mamzer. Now, man modim. Now, when we say they agree, who's the they? So, ilem Beis Shammai Beis Hillel pshita b'nei chayv eleven k'sher ninhu. So the Gemara says, if we're talking about Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, we know what their position is. Meaning that if it's just a lav, and as I just explained, from Beis Shammai's perspective, vis-a-vis the practice of Beis Hillel, it's a lav. So, okay, so it's a lav. And again, it's not good, but doesn't produce mamzerim. So, ela l'olam Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. So, he gufa chavi krisosi. So the Gemara says, from Beis Hillel's perspective, as they're looking at Beis Shammai's practice, that's a chayv ekrisus. So all in Beis Shammai le Beis Hillel lafukim mid Rabbi Kiva damer yesh mamzer mechayv elavin kamashvlan dein mamzer mechayv elavin. So the Gemara says we're looking at it from the perspective of Beis Shammai to Beis Hillel. From their perspective, it's a lav. Yes, I understand. But what needs to be clarified is the following: it's a lav and it's only a lav. But there is a sheet of Rabbi Kiva. And we've already mentioned this shita yesterday, and we're mentioning it now again today. And that is, according to Rabbi Akiva, a chayv elavin is going to produce a mamzer. Or to state it otherwise, there is no tfisas kedushin by chayv elavin. And as a result of that, the children are going to be a mamzerim. Now, that means that according to Rabbi Akiva, there's going to be a proliferation of mamzerim. Okay. But meanwhile, that's exactly the point. Meaning that although Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai disagree, here's where they don't disagree. And that is that they don't, both of them reject the shita of Rabbi Akiva. Now, I know it's funny because historically they're before Rabbi Akiva. But in other words, the Shita Rabbi Akiva must have been present at an earlier period in time. And what they're doing is rejecting that Shita. And that is, as if the only thing that produces a mamzer is only going to be Chayv Ekrisus, not a Chayv Elavin. Okay, Tashma. Again, there's one objective today. So every time the Gemara says the words Tashma, it's to just satisfy one objective. And that is, did Beis Shammai put into practice their position? Yes or no? Okay, so the Gemara says, let's see the following. Afa pishenechlu Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Also, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue over the following six topics. Number one, Tzaros. They argue about Tzaros. Good. That's what we're talking about. Number two, they're arguing about Achayas as well. please stay tuned, right? Rashi says it's coming up later in the Masechta. We'll wait until later in the Masechta to see the second machlokas. Number three, get yashan. Get yashan, literally an old get. And that means to say that a man wrote a get to his wife, and then after he wrote the get, he didn't give it to her. In other words, they're not actually divorced, but the get is already written, and then he secludes himself after having written the get. And that is that going to be disqualification of the get? Machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Suffocatious ish is an extremely funny term. It's a strange term, right? Possibly ashes ish. What does that mean? Did she sleep with another man or did she not? What does that mean, suffocatious ish? Rashi over here offers two suggestions. I'll share with you Rashi's first suggestion, which is suffocatious ish. We're talking about a katana who's married. So, and then she is with another man. Okay, so did she commit adultery? Possibly. Well, what do you mean possibly? She slept with another man. Yeah, but remember what happens with the katana as she turns 12, and that is that she has the ability to annul her current marriage. And we don't know right now whether she will or will not annul her current marriage. Okay, that's why it's suffic ashes ish. Because if she doesn't annul the marriage, then she committed adultery. And if in the future she does annul her marriage, so then this isn't adultery, hence the term suffic ashes ish. That's one suggestion, Rashi. I encourage you on your own, go through the next part of Rashi. He offers another suggestion as well. Anyway, now, a man divorces his wife and then he's misyachid with her. He secludes himself with her, which is effectively the same thing as get yashan. Here's another major debate. A man is mekadesh a woman bekesef. He hands her something of value. How much value must it have? It's a machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel and the first Mishnah in Kiddushin. So, that means to say that if I give her less than what Beis Shammai demands, so we're not married. If I give, but according to Beis Hillel, you are married. Again, fundamental debates between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So, we are going to be having many basic issues regarding, is Yibam necessary, is it not? Are we married, are we not? Right? Just basic issues. Are we divorced, or are we not? Okay, so basic issues. However, lo nimnu Beis Shammai melisa nashu mei Beis Hillel, v'lo Beis Hillel mei Beis Shammai. But they intermarried. The two schools intermarried one in the other. Lam decha shechiba v'reim v'reis nohagim zeh b'zeh, meaning that they were divided, but they were united. Right? Okay. And I know it's cliche, but here, it's perfect. It's an appropriate cliche. L'kai mashinem arhamas v'asham ahavu, meaning that the love that they had for one another, despite the fact that they were also honest. In other words, in their MS, so they said, you're wrong. But in their love for each other, okay, you're wrong. But in other words, but we're all one big happy family. So good. So that was the point of the Braisa. Again, we're learning Gemara right now. So as much as the ideas over here are lovely and wonderful and achdus and it's, you know, it's fundamental, but from the Gemara's perspective, we're only interested in one thing. And that is, did Beis Shammai practice their positions? So Rabbi Shimon Omer nimnu hein min avadai v'lo nimnu min asafek, and Rabbi Shimon says that look, if it's a vadai, meaning if from the perspective of one the other one is usur, so then of course they wouldn't intermarry. But if it was safek, but if it was only maybe, so then they would. So that last statement, the statement of Rabbi Shimon, is really difficult. If it's a safek, we're talking about a safek eishes ish. That's a safek d'oraisa. Hold that thought. We're going to come back to that in just a moment. Right now, the Gemara is just so focused, singularly focused on one thing. Did Beis Shammai practice, yes or no? And then, in just a moment, we're gonna figure out what Rabbi Shimon means by what he said. So, Iyamar Bishlam Ma'aso Mishum Hachi Nimnu. So the Gemara says, look, after reading that Braisa, it's really clear. The Braisa says that, you know what? If they knew about the history of what happened, right? Let's go back to the first topic, Sarah, right? From the perspective of Beis Hillel. If they knew that she was a tzaras erva and the brother-in-law did yibum with her, so then of course you wouldn't marry into that family. So okay, so it means they put into practice. How else do you interpret it? So Elai Amar Lo Asu Amai Nimnu. But if they didn't put into practice, so then what do you mean? What do you mean Nimnu? Why would, in other words, if they're all practicing the same shita in the base measures they're arguing, but outside they're all practicing the same, so then why does there have to be any hesitation to marry one into the other? So if it is, okay, and by the way, as I point out in the beginning of today's daf, the evidence is really strong, meaning it really is a simple pshat in the Braisa, that there were two schools of practice. So the Gemara over here, again, is going to deflect. V'tizbar nehi nami da'asu bishlam me'beis hillel nimnu me'beis hamid dechavi krisus nenu umamzerim heim le'beis hillel. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's even entertain that it were two different practices. I understand from the perspective of Beis Hillel as they're looking to the families of Beis Shammai. And again, going back to the first example of Tzaras Erva. So Tzaras Erva, so when the Yavam does Yibam with the Yavama of a Tzaras Erva, from Beis Hillel's perspective, that's an Issachar race. The child is a mamzer. I understand. But Ella Beis Shammai amai nimnu me Beis Hillel, b'nei chai ve'lav ninu, k'sherim ninu. So the Gemara says, but here's the part where even if you're right, this part of the Brisa doesn't make sense. Let's go from Beis Shammai's perspective. For what did Beis Hillel do? So for Tzaras Erva, they just let her marry somebody outside. And again, because Tzaras Erva is an Erva, and there's no mitzvah of Yibam. Okay, so good. So the Yibam Chalitza now is dissolved, and now she goes and marries somebody else. Now from Beis Shammai's perspective, what just happened? Yavam Lashuk. She's a Yavama, and she's marrying someone other than her Yavam, but that's a Lav. And again, I'm saying this in context. Let's listen carefully. So what? I mean, it is a so what. It's a big deal. But still, so what? The children are not mamzerim. So the Gemara says, okay, damar of Nachmar Yitzchak, lo nitzrucha ela etzara atzma, hanami, lo nitzrucha ela etzara atzma. So the Gemara says, you're right. Vis-a-vis the children are concerned, you're right. The children are not mamzerim. But still, in other words, but what about her herself? Are you allowed to marry her? So according to Beis Shammai, anyone other than Yavam is not allowed to marry her. So that's the nimnu. That's where they refrained. Okay, fine. So again, it's pretty clear from the Braisa also. Now we're going to go back to the statement to Rabbi Shimon, and from Rabbi Shimon said, but if it's a suffake, so then everyone's going to shrug their shoulder. The Gemara is going to say, what? So what do you mean? If it's a suffake, you're going to shrug your shoulder? You're going to shrug your shoulder on a suffake to a Braisa? So lo tema min a suffake, ela ema min a stam. Demodi luhu uparshe. So the Gemara says that no, suffix over here is not to be understood literally, can't be understood literally. Suffix over here means that stam, meaning we don't know any better, meaning that we have no, we don't know the history, but here's what we're going to assume. If there was something that was troubling in terms of the yichus, so they would tell us. Okay? In other words, they had that kind of trust in one another. So umay kamashman da'avavrei, it's not against zebazeh. So, and what we're learning together is that because they love one another. So as a result of that, so what they end up doing is that they basically said, look, we're going to marry into that family. Either Beis Shammai family, that's fine. But you know, they're shitas and so forth. If something's wrong, they're going to tell us. So hein reisha. So the Gemara says, isn't that the reisha kamashman to kula Rabbi Shimon? So the Gemara says, yeah, Rabbi Shimon is not introducing a new position within the Braisa. Rabbi Shimon is the entire Braisa. Meaning the end of the Braisa telling us that the sheet of Rabbi Shimon and how we reinterpreted suffix. Suffix does not mean suffix. Suffix just simply means that we don't know any better. And if something were wrong, they would tell us. The whole Braisa is going like the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. Okay. So once again, from this Braisa, it would seem pretty clear that Beis Shammai practiced their position. The Gemara is not totally convinced, and that's why we're going to continue. And for the remainder of today's daf, we're just going to go case after case, and it's one case study after another, in which the Gemara is going to try to litigate whether or not Beis Shammai actually practiced their position. Again, as I already pointed out in the beginning of today's daf, the preponderance of evidence would suggest they did. But the Gemara is going to do what the Gemara does, and that is go over a number of different proofs. Tashma. Amar Rav Yochanan Nuri Hei Chalach Hazu Rav Achaz B'Yisrael Nasu Kedivrei Beis Shammai Avlad Mamzer. Ledivrei Beis Hillel Nasu Kedivrei, I'm sorry, Ledivrei Beis Hillel. Nasu Kedivrei Beis Hillel Avlad Pagum Ledivrei Beis Shammai. So, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri said, this is a really difficult situation. Again, as the Gemara, as we pointed out now this morning a number of times, from Beis Hillel's perspective, children of Beit Shammai are mamzerim. From Beit Shammai's perspective, the children of Beis Hillel are b'nei lavim. So Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri says, I have a solution. Meaning, what I'll do is I'll make an institution, a takana, in which now everyone's going to be happy. Okay? I already told you this before. You know what the definition of good compromise is? Nobody's happy. Okay, good. So we'll make a compromise. And that is, bovenitgun lehu letzara shiyu choltos v'lo misyavmos. And so the takana of Yochanan Ben Nuri, he put this on the floor in the base medrash. Let's institute the following. Everyone do chalitza. Everyone do chalitza. Meaning in a circumstance of tzaras erva. So here's what we'll do. Okay, Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, can we all agree now from this point going forward, we'll do chalitza. Now, again, think about it. From Beis Shammai's perspective, so again, they're not going to be happy because Tzara Serva for them, there's a Yibum opportunity. Okay, so you have a chance of doing Yibum. But in other words, to create compromise in terms of Shalom, you'll do Chalitza. Okay, but in other words, but in the sense that something's required, so you'll do Chalitza. Now, from your perspective, Beis Hillel, so what do you say regarding Tzara Serva? Nothing's required. Okay, so you did Chalitza anyway. And so fine. So now she's a Chalitza going forward. Now again, from Beis Hillel's perspective, he's not going to be happy with that for obvious reasons and even non-obvious reasons. For obvious reasons, because now she's a Chalitza and she can't marry a Kohen. And even for non-obvious reasons, which the Gemara is about to point out, and that is, I married a woman now and now what? You're requiring her to do Chalitza? But
won't do anything for her, according to Beis Hillel. Chalitza will do zero.
Well, if the takana of Rav Yochan ben Nuri is that you have to do chalitza, so then she'll probably walk away with the status.
Not a great comment, because Shammai's losing, not
Hillel. They're both losing. How is Hillel losing?
He's just doing an extra step.
Yeah, that means she can't marry a Cohen.
Oh, she's tainted.
Yep. Everyone's going to be unhappy. Okay, good. It's a definition of a good compromise. Good. So this is a compromise of Rav Yochan ben Nuri. And so he put it on the floor, and okay, I understand, everyone's going to be unhappy. Good, that's a compromise. So the Gemara says, V'lo mizyavnos. Lo, he speak o ligmur ez hadavar. So, when somebody now wants to make a compromise position, which makes everyone unhappy, so you know what we do with it, anyone who's been at a board meeting, so you know what we do with it, we talk about it. And we continue to talk about it. Okay, fine. And let's now resolve. No, wait, one second. Let's talk about it some more. okay, nothing. 1700 years, nothing's changed. It's good. It's really good. So lo, he speak a ligmor sa davar shenitrefa ha-sha'ah. And the hour got literally confused, convoluted, meaning, okay, it never passed. Amar le Rav Shimon Gamliel manas el matzaros harishonim me'ata. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says, and look, and now you have these tzaros historically, and now what are you going to tell them? Meaning you're going to tell them now that you need to do chalitza? Ah, you were tzaros erva, and you went to your rabbi happened to follow the shita Beis Hillel, and now you went ahead and married somebody else, and now because of this new legislation that we're going to pass, now you're going to have to do chalitza as a married woman? You're gonna have to do chalitza. Rav Shimon Gamliel says it's untenable. Now once again, so here after hearing this brisa, and I'm asking the question, the Gemara is asking the question: did Beis Shammai practice their position? Again, the answer seems to be obvious. Of course they did. Why are we talking about a compromise if Beis Shammai didn't put their position to practice? But if they didn't put it into practice, so then what is Rav Shimon Gamliel saying? Manasa. What are we going to do for the women who did marry? So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Lenitzchak El Letzara Atzma. So the Gemara says, no, we're talking about the Tzara itself. Manasa Hachikamar. Hanach Tzara's the Beis Hillel Le Beis Shammai. So the Gemara says, we're talking about the Tzara itself, and here's our point. These kawais of Beis Hillel according to Beis Shammai. So Hechinav Elohu Lichlesu. So what are we going to ask him to do? We're going to ask him to do chalitza mimase agavrayhu. They're now going to be literally discussing to their husbands. Meaning, consider now from Beis Shammai's perspective, what happened? Tzara Serva. So Beis Shammai says, so what do you have to do now? You have to do yibum. Meaning Tzara Serva. There's no she's not an erva to a yavam. Adarabba. There's a mitzvah to do yibum, and they did yibum. And now what are you asking them to do? Okay, do chalitza? Right. V'chitem alim asan. And the Gemara says, okay, look, it's a collateral damage. Okay. So the Gemara says, no, it's not okay. Derechad, derechinom, v'chol nesivoseh shalom. Torah is pleasant. In other words, the Torah is never going to put people in positions that are going to make them uncomfortable, make their marriages uncomfortable, meaning that's not the derech Torah. And okay. So once again, we are left at least defending the position that maybe Beis Shammai did not actually practice their position. Tashma, the Gemara says, consider the following Amar Rabbi Tarfon, Ta'ivne Masai Tavot Tzara Sabas Liyadavi Asa'ena. Okay, the line of Rabbi Tarfon in of itself is to say the least challenging in terms of what he would like to happen. Okay, I'll just translate it. I'll leave it at its simple understanding. Right, what I would like to do is I would like to marry my sister-in-law. right? Which means I'd like to do the mitzvah of Yibum. My brother's also married to my daughter as well. Okay, good. Obviously, I'm not going to marry my daughter, but in the event where my brother dies, so what I'd love to do now is I'd love to marry my sister-in-law. Now, what he means by that, okay, even though it doesn't translate well into English, but what he means by that is that Rabbi Tarfon was a student of Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai is of the position that Tzaris Erva is not Asur. In fact, there's a Yibam opportunity. And Rabbi Tarfon saying that, look, I'm so dedicated to my Rebbeim and Shitas Beit Shammai that I want to show the world that Tzaris Erva is in fact Muteris. Good. The way he says it is a little bit strange, I admit. So anyway, so Ema, oh, I'm sorry. And what do you see over here? If Rabbi Tarfon's saying this, it means that it's practiced. It's not just in the Beis Medrash, it's practiced. So Ema Asiena. So the Gemara says, no, he doesn't mean that he's going to marry her. What he means is Asiena, I'm going to marry her off. Vahat Avnikamar. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? What's his desire over here? He's desiring to marry her off? That's almost impossible to understand. So Lafuke Midrav Yochanan Nuri. So the Gemara says, no, what he means to say is that he's going to marry her off without the rabbinic institution of chalitza. Meaning, remember, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri put on the floor that everyone's going to do chalitza, and that's going to be the compromise. And what Rabbi Tarfon's rejecting is the takana of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. Okay. It's a difficult pshat. The simple pshat is that Beit Shammai's position is actually put into practice. But again, the Gemara is deflecting because the Gemara is deflecting. It's a sister-in-law, correct. Because it's both. It's both. It's both. Yeah, it's both.
He's holding like Beit Shammai, then he's
Lo Vamayor Lashuk. If he holds like Beit Shammai, it's Yivam Lashuk. But again, if we're maintaining the position of Lo Asu, wait, if we're maintaining the position of Asu, it makes perfect sense. Because he's going to marry Tzaris Erva. But if we're saying Lo Asu, so then yes, Yivam Lashuk. But that means to say, but that only in the base Medrash, they would say it's Yivam Lashuk. But in practice, they would agree. It would be Beis Hillel. Tashma, Maisa Bebita Shem Rami Gamliel, Shaisa Nisua La'aba Achiv, Umeis Bela Banim V'yibem Rami Gamliel Tzarasa. So here now, there's a story with the daughter of Rami Gamliel, who was married to her brother. She died without children, and Rami Gamliel married the co-wife. So the Gemara says, V'tizbar Rami Gamliel Matamida Bishamayu. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. That story makes no sense. Rami Gamliel, he was a student of whom? Not Beit Shammai. Right, he was a student of Hillel and Beit Hillel. So Ella Shani Bitos Rami Gamliel died Lani Savai. So the Gemara says right. So in other words, Tzaris Erva is Asur. So why did he marry Tzaris Erva? So the Gemara says there needs an explanation, demands an explanation. He's not a student of Beit Shammai. So he married Tzaris Erva because. So the Gemara here suggests because his daughter was an Islandess. So the Gemara says, and remember what we learned back in the Mishnah? That if the Erva is Grusha, or Didmion, or is an Islandess, so then she's out of the equation, and now Tzaris Erva is no longer Tzaris Erva, but she's just simply a Yavama. Okay, good. So in this case over here, his daughter was an Islandess. So the Gemara says, Hamid Diktani Seifa, Cherma, Mimbita Shomim, Gamlil, Islandess, Aisa. So, but the Gemara says, yeah, that's a great suggestion, but I got news for you. Second half of the Braisa. Second half of the Braisa introduces us to the opinion of Acherim. Acherim say that the reason why he married the co-wife of his daughter is because his daughter was an islandess. The problem, of course, is that's arguing with the Tanakama. So there exists some sort of argument with the Tanakama, and if the Acherim was saying that the daughter is an islandess, that means the Tanakama does not agree with that. Mechlal the Tanakama Sarvalav islandess Aisa. Okay, so there has to be a difference of position regarding the Tanakama and Acherim. This part's admittedly a little bit confusing, but let's just review. Rami Gamliel married the co-wife of his daughter. Okay, his brother was married. His brother Rachmanis died without children. He left two wives. One of them happened to have been his own daughter. And the co-wife and Rami Gamliel married the co-wife. And Rami Gamliel is a student of Beis Hillel. So obviously that can't be. There's a detail. What's the detail? So the Tanakama, we don't know what the detail is, but it's not islandess. And according to Acherim, the detail is that his daughter was an islandess. So from the perspective of Acherim, great. But according to the Tanakama, fill in the blank. The reason why he married his daughter's co-wife is? So that's what the Gemara is going to try to do. So the Gemara is going to give a number of suggestions, three suggestions in total. So hikar bavlo hikar baika menayu. So the Gemara says, well, the difference of position between the two of them is the following, and that is when his brother married his daughter, when Rabbi Gamliel's brother married his own daughter, did he know she was an Eilonis? So according to Acherim, he did not know. And as a result of the fact that he did not know, therefore, it was Mekachtos. And that's why then they were never married. Masha'inkin, according to the Tanakhama, he knew. So he knew. Rashi says it the other way around. That according to the Tanakhama, he didn't know. And according to the Acherim, he did know. Okay, so according to the Tanakhama, he didn't know it's Mekachtos, and therefore it retroactively just removes the marriage. And according to the Acherim, he knew. If he knew, so then they're married, and now the co-wife is a co-wife of an Eilonis. So if you recall, just a couple of days ago, there is an opinion that even if you knew she was an Eilonis, and even though the marriage is a legitimate marriage, but vis-a-vis Yibum, she's taken out of the picture. Why? So if you recall, we said this a couple of days ago, and this was the Rashi, quoting the Halachas Gedolos, because if she's an Eilonis, she's not part of the Yibum equation. The mitzvah of Yibum is to perpetuate the name. And even though she's married, and even though she's an Erva, but because she can't have children, so therefore she is extracted from the Yibum equation, and that's why you're allowed to marry the co-wife. Okay, that's one suggestion. The Gemara is going to give two more. Or the Gemara says, maybe we're going to go back to another issue that we discussed just a couple days ago, and that is as follows. When do we freeze frame the moment of Tzaras Erva? There are two opinions. Either it's Shas Nisuin or Shas Nipul. Now, what does that mean? It means that, are we looking at the time when the brother died? And at that point in time, at the point of death, were they co-wives? Or do we even go back and look historically? Were they ever co-wives, even if subsequently he divorced her before he died? So that was a machlokus, and the Gemara is suggesting that's a machlokus over here. That's exactly the machlokus over here. So if, in fact, you are not looking at Shas Nipul, but rather you're going back to the Shas Nisuin, and that historically they were co-wives, so you hold that already creates a Tzaras Erva, so now, great. But if you hold Shas Nipul, and they were not Tzaras Erva, so you need another explanation. The other explanation would be Eilonis. Or another possible explanation in terms of whether or not one can make a precondition in terms of Bia. Meaning that he made a Tanai going into the marriage. I'm only going to marry you under the following conditions. But then what he did is he had relations with her. And so is that going to render the conditions null and void after he has relations with her? That's subject to a machlokas. It comes up later on. And the Gemara says that could be the issue between them. Okay, so when all said and done, that was a lot in a few lines of Gemara. Rabbi Gamliel married the co-wife of his daughter. That we know as a function of the mitzvah of Yibum. How did he do that? So the Gemara gives three different possible explanations of the machlokes between the Tanakhama and the Acherim. Tanakhama and Acherim said he did it. That's undisputed. And Acherim say he did it because his daughter was an Eilonis. What's behind the sheet of the Tanakhama? So the Gemara just presents the three different possible explanations of how to explain it. Mesav Rav Misharsha, again, we're back to our basic question for today's daf. Did Beis Shammai take their position and actually put into practice? So Mesav Rabbi Akiva Shalikad Esrak Becha Beshav Nagba Beis Yisur Mecha Kedivrei Beis Shammai Becha Kedivrei Beis Hillel. So Rabbi Akiva pulled an Esrog off of a tree on the first day of Shvat. Now, what do we know? Rosh Hashanah for Ilanos is machlokus between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. First Mishnah, Rosh Hashanah. According to Beis Hillel, it's Tu B'Shvat. According to Beis Shammai, it's Echa B'Shvat. And so now, if you pick off an Esrog off a tree anywhere within that 2-week frame, so now, which year does it belong to? So does it belong to, let's say we're between years 2 and 3 of the Shemitah cycle. So if it belongs to year number 2, what do I do with my second Meiser? It's called Meiser Sheni. If it belongs to year number 3, what Meiser does it belong to? It belongs to Meiser Ani. So which one is it? Well, if I hold like Beis Shammai and I pulled it off on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, any day up until the 15th, if I hold like Beis Shammai, so then it belongs to the 3rd year. If I hold like Beis Hillel, it belongs to the 2nd year. Rabbi Akiva pulled an esrog off the tree between this time span, and what did he do? He took off Meiser, and he took off Meiser again. He did both. So Shmami na Asu. So the Gemara says, okay, so now Rabbi Akiva wanted to satisfy both opinions, and therefore Asu, right? Meaning Beit Shammai practiced their position. Otherwise, why would Rabbi Akiva have to be machmer like both positions? Okay. Again, the evidence is really strong. The Gemara deflects again. Rabbi Akiva Gamar Yistapik Levaloyadi Beisel Becha B'Shvat Amor or B'Tesva B'Shvat Amor. So the Gemara says, well, there could be another way to explain it, and that is that no. Maybe there was only one accepted position, one practice position, and that's the Shita Beisila. The behavior of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva didn't know which one was Beisila's position. He didn't know whether Beisila was holding the first or the 15th. That was his suffix, and that's why he took off two Isurim. Masiv, Marzutra.
He let him ask to other Rabbonim that. How did he not know?
It's a good question. When does the mitzvah of chinuch begin regarding the mitzvah of sukkah? So according to the sheet of Beis Hillel, so the kid's got to be old enough to understand. Hey, this is a sukkah, and we sleep in the sukkah, and we eat in the sukkah, so forth and so on. Chinuch, right? The way we normally understand it. Beit Shammai has a really interesting and unusual position that vis-a-vis the mitzvah of sukkah. You know when it begins? It begins at birth. And so therefore, what happened over sukkahs is that a baby was born into the family of Beit Shammai, Mazel Tov. And so what they did is that they, piches es ma'aziva. They made a makeshift sukkah now for this baby. So that the baby now could be in the sukkah. And I say baby, by the way, newborn. Okay. So shmami na asu. So that sounds like practice, right? I don't know how else you're going to interpret that. That's practice.
By the way, he trained like her a bit, like the baby was a girl. It's even more strange.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the her over here could be a reference to the mother. Okay fine. Okay. Anyway, Shmami na Asu. So Hausa Maroa Omer Lafushi Avikavit. So over here, the Gemara says as follows. When we say that we're practicing like Beit Shammai, meaning, if it could be interpreted not as a religious practice, but just simply, you know what? Maybe we need a little bit more air. The air will be good for the mother, for the mother who just delivered, and maybe for the baby as well. I don't know. The point is, and Rashi says it really clearly over here. If it could be interpreted as a non-religious activity, so then that doesn't violate Los Hizgodudu. Los Hizgodudu is when we're practicing two different religious practices. Over here, this is not necessarily a religious practice. We're just getting a little more air. Meisiv Marzut Shemaisa B'Shokas Yehu Shaisa B'Yushalayim V'Aisa Nekuva LaMikvah V'Chol Tahara Shaiyu B'Yushalayim Nasu Agaba V'Shachu Beis Shammai V'Yirchivu Shebeis Shammai Armei Mashi Tipachis Beruba. So here we get to a mikvah discussion and a debate in terms of connection between two bodies of water. What do I need for connection? So I need, I need something to bridge the two bodies of water. And it's got to be a shokas. It's got to be some sort of, I was going to say a pipe, but I don't mean pipe. In other words, it's a canal, right? But a thin canal that connects the two. How wide does it have to be? Machlokas. This is a machlokas. So according to Beis Hillel, which again is accepted position, so it's got to be the circumference of two fingers. Take your two fingers and turn them. And so as long as the opening is wide enough where your two fingers can comfortably fit as you're turning them, that's enough. Okay, so it has to be a diameter of approximately 2 inches. Good. That's the Shita of Beis Hillel. And Beit Shammai says, no, the opening has got to be wider. Ad shetipaches beruba. The majority of it open. Okay, not sure of the majority of what, but in other words, it's got to be significantly bigger. And there happens to have been this particular body of water, Shokas Yehu, in of itself it wasn't a kasher mikvah. It would only be a kasher mikvah through connection to another body source, which was a kasher mikvah, and the opening for Beis Hillel was wide enough, but Beit Shammai wasn't happy with it. So what Beit Shammai did is they went there and they did a little excavation, and they opened it wider. And now you want to tell me that Beit Shammai didn't practice their position? Of course they did. Vitzanan, we learned in the Mishnah Erev Mikvahs, Kishofer, Zanob, Be'ovya, V'chala, Kishtei Etzbos, Choz, Roslim, Kalman. We saw this back in Chagiga. It's the Mishnah in Mikvahs, and we're seeing it again here in Yevamos. And that is, the Mishnah is telling us, the Shita of Beis Hillel. So Shmamina also. So we know that Beis Hillel was happy with this connection, and Beis Shammai was not. And Beis Shammai opened it up. So the Gemara says Shmamina also. So again, so what's pretty clear over here seems to be indisputable, and that is that Beis Shammai actually practiced their position. So Hasam, so once again, the Gemara is going to try to deflect. Maybe this wasn't for religious purposes. Meaning it could be interpreted that, you know what, the water flow is just simply not good enough. We need more water flow. Okay, so fine. So we're opening it up. For religious reasons, nah. In other words, for construction, for engineering reasons, for aesthetic reasons. But it's not a religious issue. And I know, right, I'm with you in the sense that these are forced answers. And again, I said this in the beginning of the daf, I get to say it again. The Gemara, for reasons which I don't fully understand, but the Gemara is extraordinarily resistant to the idea that Beis Shammai actually practiced their position. But again, you could see case after case, it seems pretty obvious. I mean, in some cases you're right, but in some cases, I mean, it's just, for women you're right, for Tumah Tahara of Kalim, okay. But you're right, though. For women, you're right. Tashma Dami Rabbi Lazar Bar Tzarka Shaisa La Mitara Eitzel Rav Yochanan Charani Raisi Shaya Ocha Paschareva Bemelech Bishnei Betzaras. Okay, so the Gemara tells the following story. I was learning Torah by Rav Yochanan Charani, and he was and it was a famine, and what he was eating, the bare necessities. It was bread, salt. Okay, but anyway, but he really had practically nothing to eat. Bati Valdati Zaba. So I told my father, I'm Amalo Holech Lo Zaysim. So he says, okay, so what you're going to do is you're going to bring him olives. In other words, give him a little bit more for his diet. Ra'a osan shehin lachin. So what happens is that when he saw the olives, he saw that they were wet. Now here becomes the problem. They were transported. And in the shipment, so who was shipping it? So it was an Amaretz that was shipping it. Okay, so now the Amaretz is shipping it. So he's touching the kelim. The kelim now are tamei. And the olives that are in the kelim now are going to be makabel tama. But only if the olives first became wet. Okay, so it has to be mukshal kabel tumah. So the olives are wet. So now he's looking at the olives, they're wet olives, and so he's coming to the conclusion that they are tameh, and his practice was only to eat food that was tahor. And so, look, in other words, his diet to begin with was barely anything. Okay, well, coming up, give me the impression that you've gone through this Gemara before. Good. Good. So fine. So now as he's looking at these olives, he thinks now that they're tummy. So Amrli ain ani ochel zesim. So he said, look, thank you, but no, thank you. I'm not going to eat the olives. So bati v'odati sabi. So I told my father, Amrli lecha ve'amorlo. So I reported this back to my father. My father said, here's what you're going to do. You're going to tell him the following. Chavis nikuva haisa elishesasmu shemarim. So look, the basket in which they were shipped had holes in them. Okay, sorry for the bad pun. It's a holy basket. Good, and now basically here comes the point of debate. Now it's true, by the way, that all the liquid should have drained. It didn't drain. Now the reason why is because there were dregs on the bottom, and the dregs covered up the holes. But the truth of the matter is that we didn't want that juice. We didn't want that juice, so now we get to the following debate. Vitanan. So here we are, Mishnah and Adios. Chavish alzeisim, the Mishnah is an Adios, which we do not cover in the Daf Yomi. In other words, the Adios is a Masechta. It's tucked away in the end of Seder Nezikin, and it goes through testimony of, I heard this position, I heard that position. It's Tanayim reporting what they heard of earlier generations, earlier Tanayim. Good. And the Masechta and Adios basically goes topic to topic, right? You don't have to have a long attention span in Masechta Adios, right? It just jumps from one topic to another and it gives testimony. So over here now, a Mishnah and Adios, fourth parak of Adios, Chavishol Zeisim Megugalim. So let's say I have a barrel of olives and Beis Shammai Omrim Ein Tzrichim Lenakev. So Beis Shammai is of the position that you don't have to put holes in the basket. Beis Shammai Omrim Tzricha Lenakev. And Beis Hillel says that you have to put holes in the basket. Now, from the perspective of Beis Shammai, why don't I have to put holes in the basket? Meaning, if I don't put holes in the basket, so whatever juice comes out of the olives now are going to now be machshir the fruit to be makabel tumah. Excellent point. Beis Shammai says Now, not olive juice. Olive, right, it's fruit juice. Olive oil, you're right. But not the juice that comes out of olive. And on that base Hillel disagrees. And he says, no, the juice that comes out of olive is a machshir. Now, umodim shim nikva. Now, here's where they agree. They agree that if I put holes in the barrel and visasmu shmarim, and it happens to be that so there was drainage, but it just got stuffed up. In other words, there's a bunch of dregs on the bottom and they got stuffed up. Shihi tahara. So under those circumstances, it's tahar. Why? Because now we get to the point that Ben raised just moments earlier, and that is, it's not b'chiyutan, meaning we know the halacha is that in order for something to be mukhshar l'kabel tumah, it's not just the physical action of it getting wet, but you have to want it to get wet. In other words, it has to be beratzon, right? Whenever we talk about makshirin, it's rule number one. Well, rule number one is it has to come into contact with seven liquids. But on top of that, you have to want it to come into contact with liquid. If I put it in a barrel that had holes in it, clearly I didn't want it to get wet. I the holes got stuffed up by some dregs. Okay, I didn't want it to get wet. And if you didn't want it to get wet, so it's not mukhshar l'kabel tumah. Okay, but the machlokes Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is regarding whether the juice of olives are going to be metame. Not metame. Whether they're going to be machshir. Beit Shammai says it will. Beit Hillel says it won't. You have a machlokes. So the Gemara says, now even though he was a student of Shammai, all his masim were done like the position of Beis Hillel. Okay, now, after having heard that really long brisa, right? That brisa took us from the top of the Amud. After hearing that whole long brisa, so what are we left to thinking? It certainly sounds like, I amart bishlama asu haina rebuse, right? The end of the brisa, despite the fact that in this particular case, he was a Shita, he was a Talmud of Shammai, but he always fought like Beis Hillel. Sounds like he's unusual. Sounds like usually if you're a Talmud of Beis Shammai, you follow Beis Shammai. Oh. But Ela Iyamar Lawasu my Rebuse. So the Gemara says, but otherwise, what's the Chiddush over here? Meaning it certainly sounds like he's unusual. And that usually, if you're a student of Beis Shammai, you follow Beis Shammai. Okay. Yeah, good. All right, well, we're going to pause over here. Okay, really, really good. Okay, we're almost up to speed. Okay, so and tomorrow, in the beginning of tomorrow's daf, we're going to do a little more litigation on this question of whether or not Beit Shammai actually practiced their position. I think we all get the point that it seems pretty clear they did. Anyway, let's recap. Let's review our daf today. Our daf today dealt with one and only one question. We know the machlokes in between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. We know the ramifications, especially over here as we talk about Tzaras Erva. The ramifications are devastating, whereby Tzaras Erva, according to Beit Shammai, as they look at Beit Hillel practice their position, Yavam Lashuk. We look at Beit Hillel as Beit Shammai is practicing their position, Mamzerim. That's devastating. It's a devastating difference. Okay, good. It's a huge difference, but nevertheless, they married into each other's family. Did Beit Shammai actually practice their position? So that was the open-ended question of today's daf. It's not really open-ended, but the Gemara keeps relitigating this question, did Beit Shammai practice their position? And at Mishnah after Mishnah, we went over today. And I'm just going to quickly recap the topics that we covered today in terms of the various machlokes in between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. See how good I could do. So the first topic is Taras Erva, and then the Brisa that we started off today had a number of other issues as well. Of ishus, of marriage. Achayos get yashan, safik eshes ish, megarish es ishta, velanimo bepuntiki, kesef v'shava kesef. A number of ishus questions. But still, even though there are basic marriage issues, they married one another. So how did they do that? Communication, right? That's what the Brisa says. That's the shita Rebbe Shimon. Because if there was something which they knew the other position would have a problem with, so they would inform them. Certainly sounds like they put into practice. Fine. That was one issue that we covered today. The next issue that we covered is the proposed compromise legislation of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri that let's have everyone do chalitza and everyone will be unhappy and compromise. What happened to his piece of legislation that he put on the floor? So what happened was is that they spoke about it. They talked about it. But eventually they didn't do it. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, you know, you can't do it because what of the women who are already married? What are you proposing? That they do chalitza and they become disgusting to their husbands? No, they didn't put it into practice. Anyway, by virtue of the fact that he's trying to propose a compromise, certainly get the impression that was put into practice. The statement of Rabbi Tarfon, about his about what he wanted to do regarding his sister-in-law. Certainly, and Rabbi Tarfon was a student of Beit Shammai. Again, certainly sounds like it was put into practice. The Rebbe Gamliel married married Sarah Zerva because she was an islandess. But in other words, okay. Anyway, that case over there was complicated. Rabbi Akiva taking an esrog off a tree between the first and 15th day of Shvat. And what did he do? Not one meiser, but he took off two meisers. One for meiser Sheni, the other one for meiser Ani. Isn't that because he was choshish for both the Shita of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? Certainly sounds like they put into practice. Again, the Gemara deflected that as well. The sukkah that was made for a granddaughter of Beit Shammai, or in this case, a granddaughter of Shammai HaZaken, right? Beit Shammai is just a collection of Talmidim. But Shammai HaZaken had a granddaughter, and they made a sukkah for her because he held the chinuch, it starts at a really early age, birth, and specific to the mitzvah of sukkah. Anyway, it certainly sounds like it's put into practice. Shokas Yehu, right? The connection between two mitvahs, one body of water was not a kosher mikvah, the other one was, creating connection between the two through some sort of canal. And how wide does a canal have to be? It's a machlokas. And Beit Shammai started excavating. Certainly sounds like they put into practice. The olives that were given over to Rav Yochanan HaCharani, who had really barely anything to eat, and he wouldn't eat them because he thought that they would be mukshel kabel toma. And again, that's subject to a machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel as well. And it certainly sounds like Beit Shammai's position was put into practice.